This is take two. This is post-mill project number six. I gave up on CCCP. We've already said this. So it was the Cyrillic abbreviation for the Soviet Union. I have a dark sense of humor. You're for it, you said.
Yes, it's funny. But there's projects are very popular. The Southern Baptists have the Gospel Project.
Yes.
The guys out west have the Bible Project. Mm. There's the
True.
Project is the thing to do. And so we had this post-mill project.
Yes. So both of us... recent converts to postmillennialism.
Yes, you a few years before me, but
yes.
Yeah, in the last year or so for me.
So who are you?
I'm Corey. I serve Beechwood Church as one of their elders and pastors. I serve at a Southern Baptist University, and well, I get to serve my family and my wife. I like that a lot. That's probably my favorite thing to serve. Mm. And then I had another thing I do. Oh yeah, I was podcasting before everyone else was, before every single person
yes.
under the age of 40 had a podcast.
Yes.
I was the Corey Truax Show, and it's out there wherever you find podcasts.
Yep. And I am Cody. I own Westminster Effects. You can buy stuff for your guitar at westminstereffects.com. You're viewing this on my YouTube channel, at least. You say yours will be on the audio only, like a loser.
Yes. Like an old man.
Yes. I am also a deacon at Resurrection Church. Which is where we're recording this. My pastor and I normally record the Westminster Effects Doxology podcast behind that wall. Didn't happen today, but should happen again next week. I think I'm actually going to put this up on the normal day that I publish anyway.
Yeah, so. Well, you have content. We'll provide that content today.
Yes. There we go. It all works out.
Almost like the Lord is sovereign.
Yes. So the post-mill project number six, we've been talking about theonomy, so God's standards for civil government, church government, family government, self-government. We've been talking about postmillennialism, the belief, the eschatological and covenantal belief that the kingdom will pervade the earth before the return of Christ.
Yes.
It's not a perfect, like if it's on a line graph, it's on a perfect 45 degree angle or anything. There's valleys and troughs and all that kind of stuff. But in general, Jesus wins. We believe Daniel 2, that the stone not cut by human hands will fill the earth and the kingdom will not be left to another. We believe that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church, and gates are a defensive thing. Which means the church is on the offensive and it's going to win.
Yeah. In every part of the culture and in life, we actually do think that we are not waiting for the inevitable fall of all things so that Jesus
yes.
can come rescue us. That
right.
has been the pervasive view of most of any kind of theology that emanated from Appalachia in the last 150 years in the United States. It didn't permeate a lot of Presbyterianism, didn't permeate a lot of some of the high church type of denominations, but certainly did. In Baptist world, I think a lot of Methodist world, certainly the charismatic denominations pervaded.
Yep.
And we come to a conclusion that when Jesus says, all authority in heaven and on earth is given to me, go therefore preach the gospel to all nations, baptizing them and also teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, he meant it. And that, that the church will go forward and start conquering things. If you don't like that word, that the Christian thinking will permeate entertainment and finance and government. Because there's going to be a lot of Christians.
Yep.
That we're going to start seeing education and literature Christianized because there will be a lot of believers.
And it would be, in many ways, a re-Christianization because...
In the West, at least.
In the West, because the church has largely turned its back on these kinds of things the last 100+ years.
Yeah.
So I have titled this one because my running gag is we title these things after Monty Python and the Holy Grail references. And I figured I knew what we would be talking about, even though we didn't establish it.
Mm-hmm. This is the first time we've not even given each other an idea of what we want to talk about.
Yeah, that's true. I figured we would talk about some of the recent former Twitter, current X spats going on in Reformedom.
Please.
So I have titled this one, "Tis a Silly Place."
That's what Twitter is. It is a silly place.
And so I think you've been more irritated by them. So how about you start?
Okay.
I'll tell you how... No, I'm just kidding. Not how you're wrong, but we'll go back and forth. We'll have fun with it.
I came in with only one heading, and I tried to turn it into a positive heading because I think you know of me. I want to be positive.
Yeah.
And even when I'm annoyed, I want to give the most generous reading to my interlocutor. I want to give the most generous reading to my ideological foe. And so I want to be generous. This might take me 3 minutes to say, and so it's going to feel like a monologue for a second. I apologize for that, but then I'll stop talking.
Okay, you're at 5 minutes. You have until 8.
Good. Here we go. Here's what I find. That in my post-millennial brethren, that I generally don't like my team.
Mm-hmm.
I look on Twitter at my people who are not my team. So I'll give you the G3 guys.
Sure.
They aren't post-mill.
Yep.
As far as I can tell. I think of guys like Todd Friel on Wretched Radio. I think of the John MacArthurites. They're not my team.
Mm-hmm.
They're
like, in the family, but not on this particular team.
Not on my theological team on eschatology or the theology of in times final things. I look over at G3, MacArthurites, Wretched. They do a lot of evangelism content. They do a lot of making converts content, which my understanding of post-millennialism is that's how we're going to get there. We're going to make a lot of converts.
Yes.
And I tend then to look to the people who I actually agree with because I find their arguments to be very compelling about the kingdom going forward. And they seem mostly interested in making sure that we all know that the culture is too feminized, that women shouldn't vote, that send your kids to public schools is evil. That's the things they seem interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a misalignment of priority. So I don't even know how you guys are supposed to be accomplishing the thing you're telling me you want to accomplish as you just stand on the internet and say provocative things to each other.
Right.
And then I look at your opposites and go, I think they're actually going to be the ones that accomplish it, guys.
Right.
Because they're actually thinking about making converts. And then here was my generous reading. Unless the post-millennial view is, we just think the whole culture is so pagan that we just got to wait for them to all die. Because they're not having kids, eventually, if we just have a bunch of kids and disciple them well, then what I get to do now, I'm 37, in my final years, I finally get to have enough pagans just die. And when enough pagans have died, and all of you have populated the earth, then finally there can be a Christianized culture. And that's basically my entire plan for my boys and their kids is we just got to wait for the pagans to die, guys.
Mm.
And while we're waiting for all the pagans to die, let's just say lots of provocative things to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been my frustration is the people who disagree with me seem to have a plan.
Right.
And the people who agree with me seem to say many provocative things.
Yep.
But not much else.
Mm. So is it possible, trying to explore this from all possible angles. So someone like Doug Wilson, who, let's be honest, the Moscow crowd is attracting so many people because they're having fun. Did you see the No Quarter November trailer with the flamethrower?
I saw it. I am less entertained by that than everybody else.
Okay.
But I get that. Their people do seem like they're having a blast.
Right. They're having a blast. So maybe you're not attracted to that, but they're having fun. And that attracts necessarily people who have grown up in churches where they either aren't having a blast at all, the super dour types, or it's the very seeker-sensitive megachurch stuff where they say that they're having fun and it's all cotton candy. It's not let's have fun and eat a steak. Right?
Yeah.
It's
childish fun.
Yes.
And I think what...
And there's a place for that.
Yes. What you're saying, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, that the canon press people, the Moscow crowd, it's joyful,
mm-hmm.
but it's got gravity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both things.
Yeah. So what they're basically, in a lot of ways, doing is, I think they're building their platforms by attracting people who are so sick of the anemic Christian culture that we've grown up in that they want something with a little bit of bite. It's kind of like the Mark Driscoll effect with better theology, with less yelling at people, and ultimately with more substance to it. Even though Mark Driscoll is one of my gateways into Reformed theology,
yeah, same here.
Granted, right? But you know, Mark Driscoll was objectively destructive to his own church, and for you know, by all accounts, you don't really see that with this post-mill crowd.
Let me give this critique. So they're just having fun in a way that I don't have fun with.
Yeah.
They're just not, that's not my sense of humor. It's not, not my tenor. No one's in sin there. We just don't vibe. I don't vibe with a lot of people that don't vibe with me. Does it seem to you that in our post-millennial project, we have a lot of ideas of how things should be,
mm-hmm.
but our method of getting there, evangelism, is something that the post-mill world is anemic on?
That's entirely possible. Yeah.
Because I don't know what the plan is, because even if as I've gone through these conversations with people, the response is, well, it's just important that we all think correctly. I agree with that.
Yeah. No one is going to think you're wrong about that.
I want to get more people to think correctly. And the thing that I'm going to need to do that is to win some people over mm-hmm. and convince them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see, whereas I see strategy, it's odd, I see strategy from people who think the world is going to implode on itself.
Right.
G3, MacArthur, Friel. And I don't see it in the post-mobile world, which makes me wonder then, okay, is that something I'm supposed to feel?
Right.
Am I supposed to be the evangelism guy inside post inside the dat, hashtag that post-mill world?
Right. And I didn't even mean to wear my shirt today.
That's awesome.
it just happened. It was providential. Yeah, that's entirely possible. Like, there are, it's just being part of the body of Christ. Yep. We have different parts for different roles, right? We have livers and hearts and kidneys and a couple of buttholes, right? All of those have a function.
Yeah.
And somebody needs to do political theory. Somebody needs to do general culture building. Somebody needs to write excellent music.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what Brian Sauvé is doing, et cetera. And then we do need people to think well about post-millennial evangelization. That's a real thing.
And I don't know, this is partly coming just from my frustration, probably personality differences. It feels like if there's going to be one thing left behind, that shouldn't have been the thing you all forgot.
Right. You're not wrong.
Because it seems like even recently I saw some triumphalism from my post-mill people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially my post-mill theonomists. With a Southern Baptist being made Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. It made me, like, they were talking about a Christian prince. I don't even know what that means. Like, they keep using Christian prince. I don't know what it means and where it came from.
It's language from John Calvin.
Is that a Calvin thing?
I have
no idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's in the Institutes. And him using that probably means it predates him. I'd have to go back and research that.
But like, maybe when to get them all in a room and go, all right, guys, do you know how our government works? Mm-hmm. Do you know the rules, right?
Right.
This is not a big triumphant thing. He's just a guy.
Right.
He's one guy on a federal level with lots of different governments. He has very little power. And you guys are throwing a power as if you've created Christian nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a good example. I came in at least with two examples. One is today. My heart is heavy in that. Almost definitely, we are recording at 1:23 p.m. on this Tuesday. In about 7.5 hours, it will be clear that the state of Ohio, a very red state, will have put in their constitution abortion up until what they call viability, 24 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A very red state with lots of professing Christians in it. One of the churches I follow in post-mill world is in Ohio. They will have said that state will have put abortion up at 23, 24 weeks. And so I look to one, my people who don't agree with me on end times, and their strategy of making converts seems like they would have worked. And I look back at these post-mill guys, and it seems like all they want to make sure we all know was that we should execute the women who had abortions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I understand you're all saying that. Here's the actual consequence politically that's happening right now.
Right.
If we could work on making converts so this consequence doesn't happen while you guys are just over here talking about who we should execute.
Right. Well, I think there is also room on, you know, a space like Twitter to simply, at least for a while, just throw ideas at each other. I think that's fair.
I think that, okay, so there's space to just throw ideas at each other. I think this is another thing that people seems to be in the post-mill world hate. I think I need that something called nuance then.
Right.
I need you to go ahead and just label. We're just talking junk over here, guys.
And I know one very specific example that you took issue with last week was Eric Kahn. And
the adoption thing?
The adoption thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know Eric Kahn.
Me either.
I just know that this was a thing. So if he's a raging heretic,
forgive us.
But if he straight up said adoption is not a moral obligation. And then some other things.
Yes, but that was his premise.
That was the thesis. Adoption is not a moral obligation. And a lot of people on both sides lost their minds.
In part, too, because of there's an undertone of what he says next. Now, when I say undertone, I'm not judging it this way because I refuse to judge people's motives. I hate it when people do it to me.
Yes.
I refuse to look into someone else's heart. I'm not God. He added on to the end, the righteous thing is to take care of your own. Stop trying to convince us to mm-hmm. adopt children from Haiti or Russia.
Right.
There was something that feels kinist.
Right.
For some people. That would assume this is ethnically motivated.
The best spin on that would be, if you're going to adopt, no one is arguing that adoption should not be a thing within Christianity.
We're kind of known for it.
Right. We're kind of known for it. He's not saying that, right? He's saying there's not a command of thou shalt adopt however many babies, right? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like how, having a discussion about abortion. Well, how many babies are you going to adopt? Well, that's not the point. Let's not kill babies.
Yes, right.
Right. The best possible spin for Eric Kahn would be, well, we need to make sure our families are immediate families are taken care of before we go out and adopt.
Yes.
Right. And he said that with no nuance.
Yes.
And you want the nuance.
Yes, I do. Because I think that's just I'm going to call it maturity. Mature
sure.
people want to communicate effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And if the way I communicate is now open to very obvious and good objections, and like a dozen of them, I've not communicated effectively.
Right.
I'll give you the example that I think is good kryptonite to these people. I did it on my show yesterday. A couple years ago, I criticized, and everyone should have criticized, Tim Keller for a tweet mm-hmm. where he tweeted Stephen Colbert talking to Olivia Rodrigo on a show, and Colbert represented happily and with some compelling nature his Catholic faith.
Yep.
And all Keller said was, this is a good example of evangelism in a culture. Okay, evangelizing to what? A false faith.
Mm-hmm.
And Colbert's not even a Christian. He promotes all kinds of heathenism.
Yeah.
You know what that needed, Tim? Nuance.
Yep.
You needed to
the
toss...
The thing that Keller's known for, or was known for.
You needed qualifiers.
Yeah.
Qualify your statement before you're saying it. And so, to the same thing to Kahn, who would just say, Tim Keller qualifies too much. You guys that want all the nuance, you're just not being men and being blunt enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know what he needed? Nuance. You know what you needed? Nuance.
Right.
Not just go out there and say, adoption's not morally obligated. You need to take care of your own if you start worrying about Russia and Haiti. And just drop your mic and leave.
Right.
I think it's immature.
Now, is it also feasible, because I want to put the best possible spin on this as well. And again, not defending Eric Kahn because I don't know him.
Yes.
So is it also feasible that maybe that tweet wasn't for someone like you? Maybe it was for someone else who has been told repeatedly, you have to think about adoption, because that is I haven't been exposed to it, but that has been a thing apparently within certain seminaries and things like that.
Yeah, it's emphasized. Yes, and that's why you should say so.
Right.
Say, here's my audience. Here's who I'm talking to. I'll give you an example again of that for me.
Yeah, so still being just as blunt, but qualifying the audience.
Yeah. If you want to qualify your statement, at least qualify your audience.
Yeah.
I said, right after the election in 2020, when I was just trying to get everyone to calm down, that everyone's always going to be fine. We live in a very stable society.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a blog at CoreyTruex.com trying to calm everyone down, and specifically said, this is for you believer who's right-leaning and feel panicked
mm-hmm.
about a Biden presidency.
Right.
That's for you.
Right.
And in that article or in that blog post, I made these two statements. In my adult lifetime, we've lived through the two most radical people.
Mm-hmm.
Ideologically radical Barack Obama, America hating.
Yep.
And the most personally radical, out of control personality in Donald Trump. So 12 years of my adult life, we've lived through the two most radical. And guess what? We're fine.
Yep.
I bought a house, raised some nephews, became a bat. Everything's fine. It was mm-hmm. all. So you guys can calm down too. And a person commented, I just knew as soon as what you said about Barack Obama, this wasn't for me. Exactly. I said it wasn't for you. You weren't the audience for it. I qualified who I was talking to.
Yep.
And so to those con people, it's very important to be effective. That's the question I want for most of these people. Do you care to be effective? Or do you only care to be right?
Right.
And I don't think any of them care to be effective.
Right. Right. And I think we do need to delineate between, and again, I don't know Eric Kahn, so let's just leave him out of the conversation. Guys like Jeff Durbin, Doug Wilson, James White, Joe Boot, Joel Webbin, etc. They're more in the leading voices category.
Yeah, I would put the most prominent people.
Right, and I would say the most effective. You know, whether we like their, and particularly you are annoyed by them
I
am.
I'm annoyed by them most of the time.
Right, and maybe we can work on that.
Okay.
And I think we'll get there. I think we'll get there in this episode. So there's a difference between that and the Twitter bros.
I need to work on that.
Yeah.
Because Twitter has decided to show me all the Twitter bros.
Right.
The algorithm has decided to show me the people that annoy me the most.
Maybe this is God working on you and sanctifying you. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be less annoyed at the Twitter bros.
And also to put them in context. To recognize this person has 750 followers.
Right.
And they're saying a thing that I find ridiculous and annoying, but they're a nothing and a no one.
But also understanding that they know they're on Twitter. They're not about to take this argument in its form, right, that you see on Twitter. They're not going to take that immediately into Thanksgiving with an unbelieving relative.
At least I hope not.
But that kind of gets into some of the stuff that was going on with between the Postmill bros and the G3 guys.
Yeah.
Was it a couple weeks ago when everybody started calling, I don't know, was it Owen Strand or Scott Aniel? Like, everybody's calling him gay.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I don't find, like, in this moment, I can laugh with you.
Right.
But it's those things that, again, are you in eighth grade?
Yes.
Like, if that's what you're doing.
Are we on Twitter?
So that's what I want to call, especially it is the theonomy post mill people that constantly talk about manhood,
right?
And I don't know if they're just going to argue that the pinnacle of manhood is eighth grade comedy,
right?
I'm going to argue it's not,
right? Now they're because certain memedoms are just fantastic, and so if somebody starts to say, you know, something strong and then immediately backs off, doesn't want to talk about it, then posting the gif of the African guy, why are you gay? You are gay.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right, like
the video,
free game. Maybe don't go overboard.
I can see that.
Right.
Okay.
Now maybe this has to be between people who know each other better, right? So people who have actually met face to face, we know what each other sounds like in person, right? Maybe you post something that I find silly, and I just post. Not even the gif, as I crush the table, not even the gif, but just the screen capture of that guy scowling at the camera. Why are you gay?
We're going to get that because we know each other.
We're going to understand that a little bit better. Maybe you don't throw that around with people who you don't know.
Not just maybe. I would say that's wise. Don't do that.
Possibly.
That's a terrible idea.
Definitely.
And as these guys grow in the Twitter world, that's something that they need to recognize. As your audience grows, you have a higher responsibility for how you comport yourself on the internet.
Yep.
Even like in that, I don't agree with Owen Strand and Annie. I don't know how you said his name.
I don't either.
More than I agree with this post-mill people and more theonomy type folks.
Yep.
But I like them better.
Sure.
I want to spend more time with them than I want to spend with these people. The people that I seem to run into on
the bros.
Yes. Are immature children who have beards and they're very proud of their beards.
Yeah.
And how many kids they have? But they're just children, comparatively to how these men comport themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
How much of this do you think? This just came to mind. How much of this do you think is possibly them letting out male aggression because they've basically grown up in churches that repress any kind of masculinity or aggression?
That might be the case. The show.
I'm not saying that what they're doing is always right.
Well, that's the difference between reasons and excuses.
Yes.
You're not making an excuse for them, but you might be providing a reason.
Right.
To which I would just want to say to say back to them, someone in their life needs to say to them, you need to get off Twitter.
Yeah.
You're not ready.
I'm okay with that.
You are too repressed, and you have a reason to feel this way. So now you're just lashing out and saying the most provocative things you can think of.
Yep.
So just stop talking.
Yeah.
Not for any other reason, for the almost a similar reason that Titus or Timothy says, no, a new convert shouldn't be a pastor.
Right.
If you're new, you need to chill for a minute. Don't try to lead if you're new.
Yep.
Don't try to lead if you have these unbridled passions.
And this is the difference between someone like Kanye, who proclaims faith and he's running church services, quote unquote. And someone like Kat Von D, if you saw her conversion.
Tattoo person?
Yes.
I've only recently heard about this.
Yeah, so apparently she's been converted for a couple of years and just got baptized.
Wow.
But she was an elite tattoo artist, and she's gone so far as to throw out books with New Agey stuff in them, but she's also covering up tattoos that don't represent where she is now. Like, so she's, and she had so many that any kind of laser removal would have been
not possible.
So she's just blacking out her arms.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, like, and she hasn't been, like, she's been outspoken, like, yes, this is where I am. I'm trusting in Jesus. But she's at this tiny little church, and she's done like 2 interviews. One of which was with Ali Beth Stuckey, just came out yesterday. Really good interview.
That's what I'm talking about.
And she's like, she even mentioned she's reading an ESV study Bible. And it's like, oh, beautiful. Let's go.
The Lord
let's
is
go.
Good. Yeah. For that kind of, I love that kind of conversion.
Yeah. As opposed to, I don't say this often to people, but there's been like 1 or maybe 2 people I've said, you just need to get off social media, period. Mm. Because you're making things worse for yourself and everybody else who listens to you. Thankfully, most of the people that I've told that to didn't really have a following anyway. Yeah, so there is that.
They were there for themselves.
Yeah, it's old man screaming in a cloud kind of thing.
I have been happier the last week in this way. I got my screen time on my iPhone down to 1 hour, 9 minutes per
day.
In part because I did just decide, I'm not opening Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Twitter's only showing me people that are behaving badly. And to the extent, for a minute, I really did on a ride.
I'm just going to go back through all of your posts and post that African guy scowling at the camera.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
20 of
them. That's not going to be totally obnoxious. I spent about 30 minutes driving to work one day going, can you be Amil? Can you go back to just be Amil? Because I don't like this team. I want a new jersey. And I go back through the arguments and go, no, you can't. I don't think I can just go back because I don't like these people.
Yeah. It's like the friendly debate that Keith Foskey and Doug Wilson did, where Foskey said that, you know, our form of postmillennialism is just fancy amillennialism.
Yes.
And Wilson said, well, you're just grumpy postmill. So
yeah, that was a good line.
Yeah.
I don't remember who was the moderator on that. He invited them to do both.
Can't remember his name.
It was funny.
Yeah.
This is the only other example I came in with on this, because one of my themes on a post-mill project was, what is post-mill evangelism? Is it supposed to be, we are literally waiting for all the pagans to die, or are we actually trying to make converts? Because again, the way I see post-mill is they are trying to do the second part of the Great Commission, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and they have skipped the first part. And so that's my example from Ohio, is they're out there shouting the right thing on this abortion vote today, but they've not made enough converts to get people to think rightly.
Right.
And so, another example I thought of. There's a church in my town. Oh, I have two examples now. Church in my town. I would say they're Orthodox. Mm-hmm. They're a pretty big church. I don't want to name them, but they're a spectacle model.
Yeah.
Put on a big show.
Yep.
But they also have one of the most robust food services I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like it runs at least once a week. I bet they go through a couple hundred cars. And it's run like an incredible machine. I've seen it for years. People just come through, trunks popped, and they just put in crates of groceries, and a couple hundred people and easily leave with stuff they need that week.
Yeah.
They create contact and conversation with people not in their church, potentially evangelistic conversations that I think you can eventually have out of those situations. It's also talking about post-mill, those kinds of types of ministries, to the extent that when the next time there's a discussion of a government shutdown, that church in Easley can say to those people, hey, if you're about to lose your WIC, if you're about to lose whatever benefit you've got, come to the church.
Right.
We got you.
Right.
There are those people. I see those people. They're not post-mill doing these things that actually I think could lead to a world where post-millennialism happened. Then I'm going to look back at my team and go, anything?
Right.
You got anything like this?
Right.
Or do you guys just want to talk about what should be?
Right. And I think there's room for maybe what someone puts out publicly and then like their actual church's ministry behind closed doors.
I hope that's true, but I will just give my own confusion. If your front face is all the abrasive stuff and you're keeping secret all of your good ministry,
right.
Could you guys flip that?
Maybe, or at least balance it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe do your most abrasive things in small group and put forward your things that are quite compelling and interesting. Can't remember the guy who wrote the book. Keller quoted all the time in his ministry, but he wrote about the pagan civilization leading up to Christianity becoming the official state religion in Rome, and just how the pagans were blown away by us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were adopting.
Right.
Because we were choosing to keep our girls. Because we were taking care of the widows among us. That was compelling to a pagan world. I think it still would be compelling to a pagan world. That doesn't mean that the folks are wrong over here constantly telling us about who needs to be executed in our public schools being unbiblical. That's important. But I'm telling you, the compelling thing might not be that. Mm-hmm. That might be the thing you teach them later, and we actually make converts not by saying the most abrasive things we can think of.
Right, right. And that's fair. That's fair. At the same time, the abrasive things do need to be said.
I just said that.
Right,
and
right.
They do.
Right, right.
I don't think we lead with it.
Sure.
What's your church about? Well, do you know that women shouldn't vote? Peace. I'm out of here. I don't even want to talk to you.
Yeah, if you lead with that, probably a deal breaker.
There are sometimes now with some theonomy people. One.
And in fairness, I think that's actually a minority position within the post-mill theonomy.
So.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I haven't
just saw
heard
on Twitter recently.
Yeah. I haven't heard, you know, the leading voices actually advocate for that.
I haven't either. I've not heard Doug Wilson say that. I've not heard James White say that.
Yep.
But I had I had this experience with someone only tangentially connected to me. Actually, I'm having trouble remembering. At least it's a guy. Remembering his name, I interacted recently with at a thing, who's down at theonomy world, and he said something so off the wall that it felt like the way I feel when someone says 9/11 was an inside job,
mm-hmm.
where I just go, I don't know how to talk to you, I don't know how to interact with you, so I just want to go now. I don't want to interact with you because the things you're saying are so off the wall,
right?
That there's just not, I can't find any common ground. I mean, I'm the common ground machine. I'm
right.
the conversation machine.
This is where these guys need to be discipled,
mm-hmm.
right? Because this was part of the podcast that I did with Doug Wilson, is I asked him about, you know, cage stage post-millennialists, which is most of them on Twitter, where this is not going to happen in the next 3 weeks. You can't just cram this down on America and expect for it to happen immediately. This is a long-term project.
Yes.
So how about we calm down?
Please. Some of this I know. I need to be gracious to know it is personal preference.
Yep.
My personal preference are chill people. My personal mm-hmm. preference is nuanced communication. I can't force that standard on everybody. But the same way that I don't want them to force their standard of asking me, mm-hmm. you need to be abrasive or you're a coward. All right. I don't even talk to you anymore.
Like, right.
Just leave me alone.
Right.
But can maybe I take some of your courage and you just take some of my measurement?
Yep.
Of our words?
Yep. So let me read a tweet from James White that I thought was actually very helpful, especially in terms of disagreements.
Okay.
James White has been kind of railing against what he calls the Reformed Club for a while because it just gets so nasty. Right. And James White, you know, can get pretty spicy on Twitter.
Sure can.
But in terms of how he interacts with fellow Reformed guys, it's actually, anyway. So, he says, I am truly distressed by the simple nastiness in the Reformed Club these days. Of course, I've been tired of the Reformed Club for a long time, but the past year or so has made things a lot worse. In the past 2 months, oh goodness. You all know what I'm talking about tonight. Never going to support X ever again, blah, blah, blah. Chips on shoulders all around. Get a grip, people. This is truly embarrassing. A lot of things you've been saying.
Good for him. I love all that.
Let me tell you a little story to illustrate the way out of this. Yesterday, I took on Jared Longshore's article about Jeremiah 31. So Jared Longshore, for those not in the know, was Credo Baptist until like 10 minutes ago. Mm. He was with Founders Ministries in Florida. He's now in Moscow, Idaho. He's gone post-mill and paedo-baptist. Do with that what you will.
Yes.
So he took on Jared Longshore's article about Jeremiah 31, which should really be about Hebrews 8, but anyway, on the dividing line. Went in pretty strongly because this isn't my first rodeo on the topic. I love Jared, work with Jared, and can beat him about the head and shoulders in love when necessary. I mean, I really disagreed with his assertions big time, but that does not mean I will not work with him, join with him in dealing with important issues, and appreciate his stand for truth.
Good.
I've grown out of the fundamentalist, you need to cross every T and dot every I like I do stage, thankfully. It takes work, it takes discipline, it takes love, but we can do it if we try. Anyway, I got done with the program of 2+ hours, and I look at my phone, and there's a message from Gabe Wrench of Cross Politics / Fight Laugh Feast. I give him a call, and he asks, "Did you beat up on Jared today?" "Yep. Gave him a whooping." "Cool," he says. Then he goes on to invite me to speak at their big conference in Fort Worth exactly a year from now, and we talked about a bunch of important possible topics. See how that works?
Nice.
If I were to follow the lead of a whole bunch of folks on social media these days, I would not even have returned his call. And if he did the same thing, he wouldn't want to have anything to do with me. But you see, we have this thing called maturity.
Amen.
That allows us to prioritize things. Adults can disagree and still remain focused on the important stuff. And unlike the mindset of fundamentalism, which exists among the Reformed as well, we do not have to demand that everyone else look and speak and believe exactly as we do on everything. Oh, and there's another thing we have, and it's called love. Christian love for fellow believers, informed by truth, uncompromising, but still love. I love Doug, he means Wilson, Toby Sumter, Chocolate Knox, Gabe, and all my fellow believers up in Moscow. And because I love them, I can disagree and argue and debate without having to shatter fellowship into 1,000 pieces. May I suggest this truly novel and amazing path to all of you busily anathematizing tonight on Twitter.
And here, the issue for him is someone is going to post that "why are you gay" meme.
Yeah.
Because that sounds conciliatory.
And if it's coming from Jared Longshore, that would be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I love all of that.
Right.
Because I know I probably haven't sounded like this in these 40 minutes, but I see these people as brothers.
Of course.
I think they're right.
Yes.
Even the people that I more identify with temperamentally, I think they are wrong.
Right.
And I want these people that I find so objectionable to be right. And I mean, progress their ministries, Lord, do good things through them. I think this is true. I don't know if that's returned.
Sure.
I don't know that temperamentally, sure. that was awesome.
Yeah.
You just said.
Yeah.
Temperamentally, there's a lot of guys in that post-mill theonomy world, I think, who specifically with people like me, want nothing to do with me.
Some of them, sure.
And I, admittedly, I've already said, the way they behave, I want nothing to do with them.
Right.
Because of behavior. And I don't want to be associated with it. They sound insane sometimes. But I would love a conciliatory word.
Mm-hmm. I think there's more going around, more of that within this realm than you realize.
I hope so.
Maybe because you've just gotten into it.
I'm new.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm new to it.
Because you're what, like 2 years in?
Not even.
Yeah.
Not even 2 years.
And I'm more 5, 6,
yeah,
which I'm still pretty new. But, you know, I've been to Fight Laugh Feast 3 years in a row now, et cetera.
Tell you what, I think probably did some of this. I think COVID did this to a lot of people.
Yes.
I think it radicalized some people.
Yes.
So that it sent them down some roads where they are just finding the most radical stuff. And I think that happened in maybe some post-mill theonomy world.
Yeah.
That also happened in secular world.
Yep.
I think COVID made people more insane, even in secular leftism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I just need everybody, hold on, come back, don't go off the deep end. Basically, don't let circumstances drive you.
Right. You're not even saying be nice. You're saying be reasonable with each other.
Yeah.
In terms of Christians interacting with Christians.
I think 2020 broke a lot of people's brains in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Including these dudes on Twitter who act like this.
Yeah. And totally agreed in terms of the Twitter bros. Like, I don't have just a ton of patience with some of them. Some of them, every now and then, I'll ask, hey, why are you saying XYZ? And then from there, we actually have a reasonable conversation. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that's what it takes. Sometimes it's someone saying, look, I'm not trying to rip on you, but what's going on here? How did you get there?
How'd you get to that?
Yeah.
So one of my favorite questions in conversation is, when I hear something I disagree with, is not, oh, let me tell you why I think you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love to first ask, hey, how'd you conclude that?
Right.
What was the order, the ordo salutum, I think is how that goes, of how you came to that conclusion. One other thing about postmillennialism for me that I came in the door with. Why does it feel too political to me.
Mm.
They don't, like, I heard Doug Wilson, because I was frustrated with him about something, and then listened to something from him where someone was criticizing my criticism. Sometimes I think, Mr. Wilson, you are obsessed with politics. You're too obsessed with it. And then he says, well, we don't think politics will save us. We think politics needs saving. And then something deep in me went, but man, the way you talk about it, I don't, you just said it.
Right.
But the way you talk about it, it doesn't seem that way to me.
Sure.
It seems there's a big chunk of postmillennial theonomy that is really obsessed with government.
Mm-hmm. Is that because they're actually talking about it when most Christians don't?
I've been talking about it constantly for 20 years.
I said most.
Okay. All
right. Right. Like, you've been very informed. I've been pretty informed as
yes,
well.
Me, but.
Right. And now we've kind of settled on, no, we want this to be informed by Scripture. Right. And so I think because the G3 guys, they just don't talk about it. You know, they think they're being spicy when, and of course we're talking about brothers here, but they think they're, you know, being edgy when Josh Bice goes to St. Peter's Basilica with a Martin Luther shirt on, which I honestly think was actually in fairly poor taste. But and that battle was fought and won 500 years ago, dude.
Amen.
We don't have to refight that one. We're fighting other battles right now.
Yeah, I don't even know that. That sounds childish, actually. Again, another
childish,
immature type thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And really got the Catholics in a tizzy, and I think rightfully so.
Of course it did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an unneeded error.
Yeah.
That's an unneeded action.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't even heard about that.
But like the G3 guys basically just talk about how bad postmillennialists are in terms of politics, right? And so then the postmillennialists say, well, here's what we think politically. And I think there's a lot of that going on because it's the hot topic. It's the big thing because we have such a dumpster fire, and it's kind of the not even microcosm, it's more of a macrocosm of American society. It's so bad because these other things are so bad.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'm not gay. You can tell me I'm wrong.
I guess it goes back to my opening deficit. The opening deficit was, I don't think post-mill doesn't seem to have an evangelism emphasis. I haven't found the people talking about evangelism, but I have talked. I hear a lot of people talking about what the law should be, and that Ohio thing today to me is the example.
Right.
If you do this postmillennialism thing, just saying a lot of abrasive things about abortion, I think you're going to keep losing. Like, can we just settle on this? This country loves abortion. Ohio's going to do it today. Kansas, a very red state, did it last year.
Yep.
Every time abortion has been on a ballot since the overturning of Roe, abortion wins big. It's not close.
Right.
That would happen in this state today if we had a referendum on this state today. And so
we're in South Carolina.
We're in South Carolina, if you don't know. This is going to be a state that gives abortions up to 20 weeks, 24 weeks. It would happen here. Okay. So if that's my situation, and I have one group of people talking about making converts, and one group of people just talking about government and getting power, I'm just saying, I think they're going to get there first. I think the thing that you say you want, they're going to beat you to it.
Right.
Because they're making converts.
Right. Now, in a post-millennial sense, I'm okay with that. Like, if they get there, like,
God ordains those means.
When the kingdom has pervaded the world and the dispensationalists are still talking about when the rapture is going to happen. Right. Or if we get there and all the postmillennialists are still like 1.5% of Christendom, if that, and it's still the dispensationalists freaking out about the rapture, and we're saying, for real, guys, do you not get it yet?
Look around.
Right. Look around. I'm okay with that.
Agreed.
In terms of conversions and cultural building, and stuff like that.
Ordain it to happen that way.
And it would be hilarious.
It would be.
And wouldn't then, be gay.
No, but it would be very funny. I worry that they get obsessed with politics because I know a pretty good bit about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're asking me which way is going to get what you want politically, I am telling you your way won't do it.
Right.
The way you guys are acting, the way you're sitting in rooms, smoking cigars, talking about these things, you're not getting any of that.
Right.
You might get your church thinking right, and that's important.
Yes.
You might get the Christians thinking right, that's important.
Yes.
But you don't live with a Christian prince. And you're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
You live in a representative republic. you need more people.
Sure.
You might get all your churches to think rightly. And if the church is 10% of the vote, you're going to continue to lose.
It's another, right,
like
right.
Ohio and Kansas are very red states. Ohio and Kansas are two of the more people going to church states.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are going to enshrine abortion in their constitutions.
And you're not even saying, don't talk like that when you are smoking cigars with each other.
No.
But then also talk about how you can actually change people's minds.
Yes, go do something else.
Yes.
And do something else with it. And again, when I look around at who's doing something, who's trying to make converts so we can actually get enough voters to stop the abortion thing, it's not the post-mill people.
Right.
They seem to have overlooked evangelism. I might have missed something. Some of you might know something I don't know. And to the extent that sometimes here's what it feels like. There's a post-mill theonomy stream that is looking for a king.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the Christian theonomist who lives in, I'm trying to think of a country that has a monarch still.
I think that's probably more of a symptom of general American right-wingedness right now. I think that's less post-millennial theonomic, but and more a symptom of the right wing at the moment.
Looking for a guy. Autocracy.
Yeah.
One person to fix it.
That's the CEO.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where I just need the modern new civics.
Yeah.
That's not where you live.
Right.
There's probably a country on the planet right now, I don't know what it is, that is a true monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
A king does whatever he wants.
Right.
I have a feeling that if I got in a room with a bunch of post-mill theonomies, I think some of them are looking for kings.
Mm-hmm.
They want that.
And I think a lot of them are more okay with not having necessarily democratic, Republican
I think that's
forms
what I'm
of government.
Hearing. That's what I'm picking up.
And I'm not personally, let me put it this way. I'd rather have a benevolent dictator than what we have now in terms of the results that we're going to get.
And I'm picking that up. I'm not even, because I have to
right.
Biblical, not merit.
Yeah.
I'm not saying democracy's biblical.
Sure.
It's not.
Right.
I'm not saying it's I shouldn't have said that.
Representative government is.
Representative government, I think, is modeled well.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, if we're talking about Old Testament governments, they were monarchies, theocracies.
Well, you do have, in the wilderness, the people selected the elders to go to Moses. That's how we got the federal system.
That is representative.
And so representative government, like, it actually is very biblical. And so I think what you're seeing is guys who don't mind maybe a monarchy provided it's with some kind of representation. You know, I think some of this is because we've seen the classical liberal enlightenment infused project go so poorly, largely because of the church turning her back on so many things, and because maybe classical liberalism is actually being consistent with itself all the way down at this point.
Yeah.
That we're starting to rethink things.
Brother, that's a really insightful thing to say. That great principle we started with, post-enlightenment, individual liberty, has reached its terminus.
Yeah.
And it's been a disaster.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah.
When it was, I'm going to strike out on my own, and I'm going to be an entrepreneur, and I'm going to go find new lands.
And now it's my pronouns are Zer.
And I am, not just mentally, I am the other sex.
Yep.
Not I present, I am that.
Yep.
Because I am expressively individualistic.
Yep.
And we went from using our expressive individualism to cross the Atlantic and start a colony to saying, not even biology itself will tell me what to do.
So maybe it's less an issue with classical liberalism itself, but secularized classical liberalism.
Yes.
That's the actual issue.
Yeah.
And so some of the post-mill theonobros on Twitter are actually onto something in that regard.
That's good.
And then their conclusions are a little wonky.
That's good. All right, so I can handle that. I fear that there's so many other things besides politics that we overemphasize it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think
because we need to emphasize more things like creating great art, creating great music, things like that. At the same time, I understand that only so many people can do those things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because everybody can think about politics, not particularly well all the time, But everybody is capable of thinking about politics. Not everybody can just pick up a guitar and go to town and write a new song.
Yeah, that is good. I mean, there's literally in our system, if you are 18, you can be involved in politics.
Right.
Where it takes a certain talent to do the others. You know, we were down in Charleston for our 1 year wedding anniversary over the weekend, and those churches, man, the architecture of old Charleston.
Yeah.
Back when Christian thinking was part of the planning of cities, those cities were beautiful.
Yeah.
We just don't have it anymore.
Yep.
That's what you mean. And part of that post-mill, at least where I'm seeing things, I see an obsession with politics.
Yes.
And I'm not saying it's not important. I'm saying it might be less important than what you're all saying.
Also, yes.
And that's it.
Yeah. Truth, goodness, and beauty runs through everything, including church architecture.
And on all of the other parts of life.
Yep.
Okay, that's it. I just you picked it up. I've been very frustrated with my team.
You just had to get that off your chest into a microphone.
And that is therapeutic for me. Like even there's more that we can do maybe next time. Like the guy who did the It's Good to Be a Man book.
Yes.
I like him.
Yeah.
He's been one of the less objectionable people.
Yep.
But even in some of the things that he says about masculinity and femininity. Mm-hmm. I think I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's wrong, but again, sometimes the way that says it is abrasive.
Sure.
And all I'm ever really asking about is effectiveness. I'm not saying these guys are wrong. Just, I don't know. I would consider myself to be an effective communicator.
Yeah.
And I just don't think these guys are. I don't think they're going to win new people. I think they can make the people they already have super dedicated to them. I think people that are tangentially wanting what they've got, but just broad appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it works in this day and age.
I don't know. I think it works probably a little more than you think.
Okay.
Partially because many post-mill guys were converted to post-millennialism through those guys, through their like the more abrasive guys' work, where I don't think you were all that much.
No. It was really a lot of my own study.
Right.
And then, I mean, preaching of our lead pastor going through Revelation came to the conclusion that that's just the right, it's just the best reading of the Sermon on the, not Sermon on the Mount. What's the Olivet Discourse?
Yes.
The best reading of the Olivet Discourse in Revelation was postmillennialism.
It's preterism and postmillennialism. Yeah. I keep
hitting that thing.
Stop it.
It's okay.
Yeah.
So next time we do this, I do think we want to do something on masculinity and femininity in the post-mill world.
Yeah.
Because it's hot discussion.
It is.
We live right now in a place that deconstructed masculinity and femininity.
Yep.
I would even argue it really destructed femininity and told femininity, you just better be masculine.
Yep.
And then told masculinity, just kind of rub off the edges so that we have almost a unigender.
Yep.
We told women, get masculine. Men get feminine, and we just kind of landed in a I don't know what you call that, an amalgamation?
Gay.
you have called like 12 things gay on this episode. And you careful on YouTube, man. They're going to end up I'm going to say demonetize you, but you might not even be monetized.
I'm not monetized.
Okay, yeah, you can do whatever
I don't have enough viewership yet.
Okay. That's at least what I think I want to do.
Jokes on you, YouTube.
I can say what I want. I'll call whatever I want gay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not usually my style, but you brought it out of me.
Yeah. You're welcome for that.
I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. You just go to a couple post-mill conferences. You'll be calling everything gay at that point.
You mind if I do some shameless self-promotion?
By all means.
CoreyTruex.com. All the things that I write and do. Also, just look for Corey Truex, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can find my show wherever it is. This guy does the Westminster Doxology podcast.
Yep, westminstereffects.com. You can go to codyfields.com for my blog. I'm about to ramp that up a little bit more for the holiday season.
Very nice.
And westminstereffects.com, codyfields.com, Westminster Effects Doxology podcast. You can find that wherever, including YouTube, which is where you'll see this if you're seeing this. So.
Final important question. Should people love God, love their neighbor, and make some music?
Yes.
They should do that.
Yes.
Okay. And then should also people come back for a new episode soon? And until then, peace and love.
Yes.
That's our sign off.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
All right. That's all I got.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Peace.